Another round of applause, please. And we will start.
Ja, vielen lieben Dank.
Yes, thank you very much for this nice reception. We are happy to be here. And I suggest we get started, because we don't really have enough time today. We have to make good use of our time. But let's start with what is amateur radio, so that we are all on the same level. There's an amateur radio law in Germany, and it says that amateur radio is everything that is experimental and technical scientific for education and for reconciliation between peoples, and it can support emergency and disaster relief, and we can use it to communicate with space-based radio stations. And these are mostly satellites, but for us, amateur radio is a hobby, and we do it in our free time and have lots of fun doing that. And on the left side of the slide, you can see what it looks like in our shack, in our radio shack. We have a computer and a transceiver and a microphone and a power amplifier, and of course a Mate is there and headphones, and we are really like a cozy atmosphere when doing radio operations. And maybe you should know something about DK0TU, and that is our group at the Technical University of Berlin, and it has existed since 1972. We are 66 active persons there, and on the roof of the Technical University of Berlin, there is an amateur radio station, and that has also been established in 1972, and it has a long tradition. In this club, we do different things. We participate in radio contests at least once a year, and you can practice that in the framework of a contest, and we disassemble and assemble and disassemble and assemble antennas, which is part of our hobby, and in cooperation with two courses at the university, we offer an amateur radio course and a radio astronomy course and a course about satellite communications. This is what we do. And we start how we came about to make radio contact with an astronaut. And in our case, we had this funny, small but really big antenna on our roof. This is a four group of Yagi antennas, and this really has some power, and we can really listen to satellites very well, even if they are quiet. And it has been built as part of a student project, and we have it in our club, and there's a big open source, open data satellite communication network, SatNOC, and we have it here, and it's just there, we have it. Based on that, on the next slide, we use it as a SatNOC base station for this open network. Anyone who has a SatNOC station can also use our system, and you can book observation time and use that if you have another station yourself. And this was the point where on the 15th of February, 25, FRAM 2, this private space mission, had an SSTV competition. So it's a competition where from the space vehicle pictures are sent down, and if you have proper antennas, you can receive those. And since we have this antenna, we also decode this test transmissions, and we receive the test images that can look like this, for example. It's an analog transmission protocol, which is why we have these stripes. When there was some noise in the spectrum, some errors, the International Space Station regularly sends pictures like this, and you can receive them and have fun with them. FRAM2 also wanted to make a competition like that from their space capsule and did these test transmissions. And Rabea really wrote to us and made some PR for this competition. And would you like to participate in that competition? And we already had these tests, and we already wrote back to her that we already participated in the test and showed her the picture and showed her that we knew what we were doing. And exactly 1 month later, on the 15th of March, there was this email, and there was another question. Maybe could you imagine doing a bit more, making maybe have a real conversation with someone in space? And you can imagine what our answer was. Of course, we can imagine that. And that was about 2 weeks before the contact. The contact was planned on the 1st of April. And of course, there's some planning involved. We had 17 days and a few more hours and minutes until the radio connection. And this was our first plan. And the context of this conversation was like the contacts with the International Space Station and the contact of students to the ISS to raise interest for STEM. And it's always a good idea to have a live stream to the internet if you do these kinds of projects. And since it was only 2 weeks and we didn't really know a lot about streaming, we contacted the university and asked the press office, would you like to produce a live stream? And the reply came pretty quickly, and they said it was a great project, and here are two people to support you in doing that. So thank you very much to the Technical University, and they made the live stream, and we could concentrate on the rest. So there were some phone calls and some meetings with Lars, who was the representative for Rabea, because she was still undergoing astronaut training. And we had contact with the project for the contacts to the International Space Station, the ARES project. And what was fixed, we had a date that was the 1st of April, 4 past 9, Central European Summertime. We have frequencies for transmission and reception. And the contact can be at most 10 minutes long if the space capsule rises over Berlin and then sets 10 minutes later. And we already have things in our club and can use that, and hopefully we don't have too much work. And of course there are lots of buts. So what kind of antenna should we use? What is the polarization? We talk about that in a minute. And what's the transmission power of the space vehicle? There were a few open questions and a few more than we thought initially. So let's talk about some basics in satellite communication.
Right, so we have senders and receivers, and the receivers are obviously in space. And what characterizes this the most is the link budget. So one point is the output power, transmission power. The more output power we have, it's generally easier to receive, of course. And additionally, you have antenna gains. It's all on the isotropic radiation pattern. But of course, you want to have directional antennas, which focus the gain into a certain direction to have a gain in this main pattern. Additionally, we also have polarization problems. If you have these are magnetic fields similar to light. With you know these 3D glasses from 3D cinema. So similar to these polarization filters, you also have polarization in antennas, and this has similar effects. There's linear and circular sending, and if you have leftward and rightward polarization in the same conversation, you don't really can you can't really hear anything because there's an infinite impedance. Same with the different directions. Otherwise, there are also high losses. So usually you combine linear on one side and then circular on the other side. You have 3 dB of losses, but it's very equal. Additionally, you have path loss are free space dispersion, so the isotrope expansion of the antenna. So the further you are away, the bigger the antenna you need. Because if you have the same size of antenna, the less power arrives at the antenna. So there's a quadratic loss here. And also, if you look at the whole system, you have a sender, you have a with an antenna and a receiver. Here you see the loss of the free space dispersion, also the gain of the receiver antenna, which also has a direction. And then so this is the receiving power. So all receivers generally have a sensitivity below which they, above which we can demodulate or like receive a signal. And if you can really imagine, to imagine this for free space dispersion, so the dampening in free space, in the zenith, so when the spacecraft is directly above us, which is 430 kilometers of distance, it gives us 140 decibels of dampening. And on the horizon, there's 160 decibels. So decibels is a logarithmic unit, which means 150 decibels is 10 to the power of minus 15 as a factor. So if you're up at the sender, so you send 1 watt of power, you just receive 1 femtowatt. So that's not a lot at all. Also, you have the Doppler shift. The satellite in low Earth orbit, 430 kilometers, is flying at about 7,000 meters per second. So that means the Doppler effect that you even hear when you just hear an ambulance, it also happened with radio frequencies, and it's even worse. So we have multiple kilohertz of frequency shift here that you need to compensate for on the ground.
So jetzt kommen wir insgesamt zu den Tracking-Fehlern.
Also let's talk about tracking errors.
Richtcharakteristik, dass er drüber fährt.
If the spacecraft is above you with the antenna and you have the gain, you want to point at each other. So in generally, if you imagine the antenna can move in azimuth and direction. And if you look at this, there's a certain error you need to compensate. So you might point wrongly. If you point here, but it's on the other side of this band, you lose gain, of course. Same with the elevation. So if you point here, but the satellite is actually here, the problem here is there's also a Doppler shift here. So that means there's not only loss of power, but also wrong frequency. So these are problems that you really need to look at. There's also interference. On our receiving end, we have other radio services that interfere with us, but also on the spacecraft, they hear half of Earth. There's a strong sender there, then we also get, they're also limited against us because we are very small signals. So we need to push more power to really distinguish ourselves from them. So it's 7 days to radio contact, right, 7 days. So at this problem, we had a little communication meeting with Lars and Aris, and then also another person who had a lot of experience from Aris, and then another person with an NDA. This person was there but couldn't really say anything, and this meeting was very easy, and well, basically it was like this. What does the antenna at the spacecraft look like? What kind of antenna is it? And the answer was, yes, there is an antenna. And it usually works for the frequency you're aiming at. So our question question was, what sending power does the radio station have? How much gain does the antenna? Which polarity has it? Does it have polarization? Does it have? And they said it is not available. But between the lines, we could hear that our antenna, which is right-wing polarized, is not as good. So we assume that they have leftwards polarization. And the other thing they had, they said we needed at least 100 watts of sending power on the ground, rather more. But at least there was an FCC filing. So companies need to share what frequencies they use, and we can deduce from that the radio has at least 10 watts of sending power. The antenna has 2.2 dBi polarization. We don't know, but maybe let's say leftwards, and the modulation is narrowband FM. So at least we're correct in that regard. So if we write all of that into our graph. So in dBm is like 40 dBm. So from an isotropic antenna, so we assume we have about 42 dBm sending power. So that's about 4 femtowatt that actually arrives at us. So in theory, with the standard radio transceivers, we could receive minus 120 dBm in that modulation, but there's no margin at all. And usually you want 20 dBs of margin, especially because you don't know exactly where is the satellite above, and we only have one chance, so that we also need to consider that. So we want at least 20 dBs, maybe even 40 dBs of margin here to be safe. So we need minus 80 dB of power. So we need to receive 16 dBi gain for the receiving. And our antenna array had that, the one that we had. All right, crisis management. Let's just build three different radio systems with different focuses. One, frequency tracking. So we look at the frequency, we look at if the rocket starts earlier, the time shift is a bit different, so the Doppler tracking is different, the orbital data is different, and we need to correct for that.
So
when we want to use that for communication, we have a second station, which is the high-gain antenna from our subnet stations with a 50-watt transceiver. That is not a 100-watt transceiver, but at least we know it uses, never touch a running system. And the third station would be high power. That would be a last-minute DIY. Let's have a look.
So we have a non-directional antenna and use a software-defined radio and have an analog-to-digital converter. And since after that, we do it all in a PC and we need some frequency selection and filtering and so on. That should work in theory, but let's see what it looks like. So this is the antenna. If we really look at the 70-centimeter amateur radio band, we can see that you really wanted to have minus 120 decibels below the noise, and we have a signal that is far beyond what we wanted to see, and there's some dynamics about what we can receive, so we need filter to cut out what we want to see and make a pre-amplification and filter again. And that's why we can use the simple antenna to track the spectrum that we need. But of course, we can't demodulate anything, but you can see it optically here in the spectrum. The second station is we reuse our SatNav station. This has quite exactly the gain that we need. That wasn't planned, but it just happened to be fitting. But the disadvantage is that it has only a very small angle, about 7 degrees. So if we are not tracking exactly, we lose a lot of power. And it has a right-hand polarization, which maybe isn't optimal. But we also add a cavity bandpass filter and use one of these old transceivers, and where we can set the frequencies manually. It's not great, but it works. And the third station, where we have two X-Quad antennas, it's like the Yagi antennas with a high gain, which have a left-hand polarization, and we want to use a 300-watt power amplifier, a DIY, which we haven't tested yet. And we need a sequencer to switch between receiving and transmission. And so it needs to switch automatically. That's the block diagram, what it looks like. It goes after reception through the switch, and we have a filter and preamp and filter and to the transceiver. And from the transceiver, it goes into the BIAS-T. The BIAS-T combines high frequency, radio frequency, and a DC signal that you can send over the same wire to switch everything. And then we can switch, and then we have an attenuation element to attenuate the signal that we can protect our transmitter. And then we have our home-built power amplifier. And that will be monitored by a spectrum analyzer so that we can be sure that it works what we did. This is the transceiver. It has this waterfall diagram, and we can see when it all goes wrong. And this is the wonderful sequencer at 3 a.m. built by a computer scientist with a fear of hardware. And we had some capacitors to delay the switching, and in the tests it sort of worked, but let's see. And this is a DVB-T power amplifier from an old transmitter. We call it the Fryer, and it makes 300 watts radiated power and also 300 watts of thermal waste heat. And individually, it all worked with low power, and with high power, the power amplifier switches off and the relays are fluttering. And we found that these BIAS-Ts, these combiners for the DC signal, do some weird electromagnetic stuff. But one of our ham radio friends had found some BIAS-Ts that can tolerate a kilowatt of power from his old mobile radio station. And the sequencing works. It's not easy to handle and to operate. Maybe we should make a checklist, but we assembled it and tested it, and it worked. And the next day is going to be the contact to the space station. Well, we hoped it all worked, but that would have been nice. Okay, should we just check the setup of the radio and checklist? Okay, we write that soon. Oops. So what happened? We didn't turn on the power supply for the sequencer, and when we turned on the power amplifier, it all went, put all its power into the receiver, and that went up in smoke. And the LNA released the magic smoke. So we can build something like that. We do that with the students sometimes and build this low noise amplifier. And we rebuild the sequencer to make it foolproof for me. And 10 hours until the overflight, we just leave everything switched on, so hopefully nothing goes wrong. So after all the tribulations, there's the hour of truth. Will it work or won't it work? So the operation looks like in station 3 and 2, there were two radio operators. That was Anna and me, and I'm in the background with the black hair. Maybe you can see that. And we wanted to establish the contact with Rabea Rogge. And station one is the monitoring. We look at the exact frequencies where we are, and we really monitor the frequencies to be sure that we were on the right one. And then we had the rotor control team for the movements of the antennas. Then we had audio operations, and we had the Fryer watchmen, the Fryer watchers that you have seen, and for the Fryer and the coordinator. We had a fixed time slot from 7:29:33 to 7:39:52 UTC, and both radio operators on stations 3 and 2. And the primary frequency, and we had primary and backup frequency, and for reception that was 437.56 MHz, and for transmission 437.925 MHz. We had prepared 17 questions from us radio amateurs, and it already was 7:29, and we started transmitting into space in the hope that we would be heard. And a minute passes, 2 minutes pass, 4 minutes pass. Oh, now it's getting critical. That's exactly what we looked like. But then...
Delta Kilo Zero Tango Uniform, I got you loud and clear. How me? Can you hear me? This is Lima Bravo November 9 Juliet. Over.
Yes, that was English, so I guess you could hear very clear reception, great signal.
Yay!
We made contact after 6 minutes and 27 seconds on the primary station. That was S9 plus 20, so minus 53 decibel. That was very great signal. She could answer 2 questions, and she could hear the third one. And Anna asked all the questions, and after 1 minute and 9 seconds, the contact was lost. Then it was my turn, and I really called her desperately, and she heard us, but we couldn't hear her. So what happened? Well, in fact, we weren't the only ones who heard her, but other radio amateurs also could hear her, an Irishman called Robbie with Echo India 2 India Papa. He uploaded it to YouTube, and he could see that really she was on the uplink frequency, and then she changed to the downlog frequency, and then we could hear her, and for 1 minute and 15 seconds, and then she changed to another frequency, but not to the uplink frequency, and there was a bit of a shift there. And if we heard her only for 1 minute and 9 seconds, it was really a great success. So what could we learn? On station 3, it was the case that was an excellent reception. Rabea told us when she came to the university that she could hear us really very well, when we could hear her. And the analysis from the waterfall imaging was that she changed frequency to the downlog frequency, and then the contact was lost because the frequency was changed again. We don't know why, if it was a technical defect or a human error. Operator error, we don't know. The second station did not receive anything, and maybe the angle was too small, the opening angle of the main signal, and maybe because it was the right-hand polarization of the antenna, but that is just speculation. But we don't have any information of the space antenna. And it could have had a left-hand polarization, and with left-hand towards right-hand polarization has 120 decibels of damping, and that's really a big problem. But really want to say a big thank you to Rabea Rogge that she made that possible. And we'd like to ask the ARIS project for mentoring and all the experience that they shared with us. And we would like to thank all DK0TU members for unpaid night shifts. Well, they weren't paid anyway, but they really were trembling along with us, and we're very excited about that, and thank you very much.
Wow.
Wow. You made this very exciting. Thank you so much for this fantastic talk and this amazing feat. We have about 10 minutes left. So if you have questions, we have 6 room microphones. They are not far away from you, and the internet can also ask questions. The internet currently doesn't have any questions. So come on. I can't imagine you don't have questions about this. Microphone number 6. I have a question regarding Doppler shift and FM modularization. So you are FM modulated and a Doppler shift in a FM modulation is just a DESI off shift after demodulation. Are you using that?
So we didn't really exploit it, but the demodulator. So we have these ready-made transceivers that we made. We cannot really get the offset as an output. It can maybe correct the frequency. It has an automatic feedback control loop. So internally, the transceivers use that, but externally on our side, we couldn't really do that with a software-defined radio. That would have been possible to do an automatic tracking of the frequency. But with a tight schedule, simple solutions are usually better. Otherwise, more can go wrong.
Mic number 4, please. So you didn't have an antenna with that follows, so just a direct line of communication, right?
I can go back on the slides. We had tracking antennas. So we skipped that, but that's what it looked like. We had a wonderful 3D Tetris. And really had to play Tetris to put everything into that enclosure. But yes, it was tracked. It was a tracking antenna. And the other antenna... The other antenna was the Micron 4, this small antenna array that we showed in the beginning. So we had 2 tracking antennas and the station 1 that was used for monitoring that was not tracked.
Mic number 1, please. Again, about Doppler shift. Did you handle that completely on the ground and the spacecraft was to support the spacecraft, or did both sides have to change? Adapt.
We did that on Earth completely on the ground. That can be done differently, but as far as I know, it is normal to do that tracking on the Earth. Maybe towards the frequency problem, why that was mixed up. There was a sheet with RX and TX frequencies, but maybe that was swapped. But that was for us, and so it's the other way around for the other station. So, yeah, maybe there was a mistake.
Right, I'm glancing towards the internet. Did a question arrive from there? No? Then mic 3, please. Thank you so much for this great talk. You had a sender with 50 watts, and then you suddenly said, oh, we need 400 or 300 watts. So don't you have to do a lot of requests and public service stuff?
No, the nice thing is that it's amateur radio, and so we are a Class A radio station, DK0TU, and we could go up to 750 watts, even in the 70 centimeter band. I don't know anyone who makes 750 watts in 70 centimeters, but that, because that is really a lot. But yes, we were allowed to do that. We are really tinkering. We love tinkering. And it's only a bit of a sport to do a lot of power. But because we have these unknowns in this case, more power was better in this case, at least to be received. And it worked out in the end, and Rabea, she could really hear us quite early. And in under perfect conditions, 10 watts should have been enough, but...
Mic one just arrived. Yes, Chris, new question. Did you test this setup with ISS?
ISS, yes. Yes, we tried it with various satellites to see if we could see that. And as a fun fact, on Station 1, we also tested that. But we couldn't hear Rabea with that one. But yes, we tested all of them, also with the radio operators, to simulate that. And they were all successful, really. We had several satellites, we tracked them and transmit, and we could also hear the satellites who only transmitted a few milliwatts. We could see them and track them, and we had an exact orbit for those. And in this case, with a varying start window, there were bigger errors, perhaps, in the orbital elements. But we have tested it with satellites, yes.
The internet has a question. Right. Oh, even two questions from the internet. First one, this has something to do with science and research. Why is this secret? Why is there so many secrets here?
Well, we have introduced the term of a space-based service provider, and companies with which they think they can earn money, they don't like to talk about that and disclose that. And unfortunately, that's how it is, and maybe we have to live with that, or maybe there is a way to disclose that anyway. But you have to say this is a completely commercial, private mission to the space. We also made a bit of science, but it was completely private. And this service provider who launched the space vehicle, they have NDAs like other companies too, unfortunately.
All right, one last question, hopefully short because time is almost over.
Signal Angel, bitte.
Signal Angel, please. The question is the frequency area range that you use for general, which frequency ranges are you using?
The frequencies we used are assigned to amateur satellite operation. I don't know where exactly that starts, maybe at 436 megahertz up to 438 megahertz or 435 to 438. Thanks, boss. Yes, boss says 435 to 438 megahertz, and that is assigned to in the 70 centimeter amateur radio band, has been assigned for space communications if you have the appropriate amateur radio license.